Ring the bell. We've done it again. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates to 4.875 fixed. Lower your monthly payment, get cash out, pay off credit cards, and best of all, make no mortgage payments for 2 months. Lock in this incredible 4.875 rate and get your cash in as little as 14 days. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
5.81 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
About one-fifth of the states have reported active measles outbreaks, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and we have some here in Louisiana. Dr. Jennifer Rovegno, Director of New Orleans Health Department, joins us. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Noel.
So at the present time, how many confirmed cases?
So as of the most recent data from late last week in the U.S., we've got 935 confirmed cases in 30 states. And that's already more than three times the number of cases that we had all of last year. So this is a serious and growing issue.
And how many confirmed cases in Louisiana?
So just two in Louisiana, fortunately. I think we've all been waiting, given that the locus of the outbreak is in Texas, and certainly that's just a short drive away. The two were reported a few weeks ago. They are in the South Louisiana area, and they're associated with travel. So far, that we just know of two. We haven't heard of any more cases from that particular outbreak.
Do we know if what part of the world these folks have traveled to and whether there's any consistency that's developing there or a pattern that's developing there?
No, so interestingly, there are a lot of places. I don't know the specific place where they traveled, but the last two measles cases that we had in Louisiana, which I believe was last year, were from two different countries. We know that there are certain countries, and they're on every continent, that have historically very low vaccination rates. And so we do expect travelers from those areas to be at higher risk. But really, the United States is turning into one of those countries now. You know, we're a country where in 2000, we declared measles basically eliminated. And the fact that we are so far back from that now is really disturbing.
So let's talk about prevention. I think most kids my age, we took the MMR vaccine. So how long is the efficacy of that vaccine, and should you take it again?
Yeah, and that's the great thing about the MMR. If you've had your full series, which is two shots, that confers upon you basically lifelong protection. It is 97% plus effective for your life. So unlike a tetanus shot or a flu shot, you don't need to get a booster. So the vast majority of us that have gotten our full series won't need a booster. If you have an immunocompromising condition, you're on chemotherapy for whatever reason, you had your spleen removed, you should definitely talk to your doctor about getting titers or seeing if you need a booster. But the vast majority of us don't. And most Louisianians, by the time they reach kindergarten, historically, have been up to date. And that's why we've been able to weather outbreaks in the past. The problem is that as we see vaccination rates start to slip all over the country, start to slip in Louisiana, it's going to be a lot harder to contain this outbreak and future outbreaks.
Is the MMR not required any longer in public school education landscape as well as private? I mean, I know when I was coming up, it was required by both.
Well, it is, except Louisiana has some very generous exemptions. So a family can get an exemption for any number of reasons. Different states have different standards for that. Some require very strict exemptions. We do not. So the more exemptions there are, the more people you have getting them. And I think that's what's hurt our rates over the last several years.
So if you've had it, you're fine. There's no follow-up. If you've not had it, are there any restrictions to getting it? Age or,
no.
or health? Or
now is the time to get it. If you are, with the caveat that if you are a very, very young babies, shouldn't get the measles vaccine before age one. Or they can, but because their immune system isn't quite up to speed, they will need to get an extra shot. So typically the first vaccination is given at age one. If you are pregnant, it's a vaccine that you don't recommend getting while pregnant. So either before getting pregnant or after getting pregnant. And then again, if you have some very specific rare immunocompromising conditions, it's definitely something you're going to want to talk to your physicians about. But these are really the exceptions and not the rule. And I just want to reiterate that this is the effective way to prevent yourself from getting and transmitting measles. There isn't any drug that you can take to prevent it. Vitamins don't prevent it. If you get measles, there's really nothing that will help you have an easy course. And while for some people it's just a rash and a fever, in about 20%, people are hospitalized, and about 1 in 20 individuals have a serious complication. And those complications are things like a really, really bad pneumonia, a really, really bad encephalitis, which is a brain infection. And as we've seen, there's been 3 deaths so far this year associated with this particular outbreak. So vaccination is really the way to go. It's been given to millions and millions and millions of people over the last decades, and is highly safe and effective. So for anybody thinking, well, maybe I won't get vaccinated, I'll try something else, there really isn't anything else to try.
Are there different strains or types of measles? For some reason, I used to remember people referring to red measles and is it German measles?
German measles, right. Those are actually different viruses. The measles virus is pretty stable. It's not like something like flu or coronaviruses, which cause the common cold, as well as COVID, that change very frequently. It is a pretty stable virus. There were other things named measles, like German measles, but those are actually different viruses and have a different scientific name. So again, it's one virus. It doesn't change. The vaccine has been tested in millions and over millions and millions of cases in decades. And so it's a pretty straightforward. And the thing about measles is that it is the most, some would say the most infectious disease, right? So it is one of the diseases, if not the disease, that is so easily spread, which is why outbreaks are a real concern. Before we had a vaccine, if 100% of people, people in a room are unvaccinated and there's one person with measles that walks into that room, the likelihood is that 90 people out of those 100 are going to get measles. It's very, very, very easy to transmit. It can stay in the air for 2 hours, sometimes more. And so having something that prevents it, that stops that transmission, you can do a lot of good for a lot of people all at once. And that's why we've gone to, from having 500 to 600 deaths a year to having almost no deaths over, you know, once we control the epidemic. We certainly don't want to go back to those days.
So if what we're saying about the MMR and in its efficacy, that we would not really expect to see many then 50, 60, 70, 80-year-olds catch the measles, right?
That's right. And this is why young kids who are not vaccinated are really at high risk.
Yeah, but as it spreads, when you're eliminating the vast majority of the population, there are only a few left, right?
Right.
Not a few, but
exactly.
I mean, you know what I mean. Right.
Exactly. And so we're seeing our youngest kids, the kids in this particular outbreak, the kids under 5 years, are disproportionately getting hospitalized and have they're really taking up the bulk of this epidemic. Because in this particular outbreak, the vast majority of them are unvaccinated. And, you know, we all love our children. We all want to protect our children. Having a child get really, really sick with a preventable disease.
Doc, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm there. Uh-huh.
Okay, you there. I lost the connection for a second. I apologize. Let me ask this question real quick. So if we have the number of the confirmed cases that we have, I guess we already know that these people have not been previously vaccinated then.
Right. 96% of the cases we know about, the 935 cases, 96% of them had no vaccine. So yeah, it's pretty compelling.
Right. And because we don't ever achieve, and if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, because everyone, you know, says that, oh, if I get the vaccine, it eliminates all risk. In the vaccine world, that's not likely to happen. That's otherwise known as sterilized immunity, sterilizing immunity. That's not the case. Right. I mean, you don't achieve 100% success rate with any of this. We have the detractors that say, oh, you see, somebody got had the vaccine. They got the measles. All right. Let's go to a break. 504-260-1870. We'll try to get on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We'll try to reconnect with Dr. Jennifer Evagno.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now stay with us. Okay, folks, we're back with Dr. Jennifer Evagno, Director of New Orleans Health Department. Doc, I apologize. We lost our connection, but we got it reestablished. So thank you for hanging with us. I was just trying to have folks recognize there's not really a vaccine that I'm aware of that is 100% foolproof, 100% efficacy. You're going to have, I guess it's best called anomalies, where folks have it, still get it, because you don't achieve sterilizing immunity with vaccines for the most part. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think that's true of any medical treatment, right? I don't know of anything that's 100% successful in everyone, but I'll give you an example. My youngest, you know, when I was a kid, we got chickenpox because there wasn't a chickenpox vaccine, right? So we all suffered through really miserable, itchy weeks.
I was right there with you.
My youngest got the chickenpox vaccine, and one day when she was about 10, I saw a little spot on her, and I said, gosh, that looks really like chickenpox. Turns out she had a very, very, very mild chickenpox. She maybe had two or three, you know, little spots. She felt a little bad for a couple of hours, and then she was great and back to school. That's very different than my week spent out of, you know, out of school and feeling miserable. And so, you know, at their worst, vaccines just prevent against, you know, severe disease. And at their best, they can prevent the disease entirely.
Yeah, Doc, I had it from the tip of my toes to the top of my head, and I still remember it vividly. Vividly. Getting a number of texts, people, like, you know, they're saying, I was born in 1964, I was born in 1960, yep. I think I got the MMR, I don't know. Yep. Where's the best place for me to go to figure out if I did or I didn't? Is there such a place?
Yeah, so if you got vaccinated, wherever the state was you got vaccinated, and for many people that'll be Louisiana, you can sometimes get the records from the state. And certainly if you're a New Orleans resident, you can call our office and we can help you with that. If you were vaccinated in another state, the state should have your records. But, you know, if you really are wanting to know, talk to your doctor. If you were born, mass vaccination started in the mid-60s. So if you were born in the mid-60s or later, you should have had your shots. But you can go to LDH's website. Again, if you're in New Orleans, you can certainly call us and we can help point you in the right direction, or you can talk to your doctor.
Yeah. And if you have school records, always, I remember every year we used to have to bring in all of the vaccination cards, right? To prove that
we... And that still happens. And our schools really are first line, because that's where an outbreak is likely to show itself. And, you know, if we get a measles case in a school, that could potentially shut down the school for some period of time. And, you know, none of us wants to go back to having to shut down schools for an infectious disease. I think we all, you know, saw that that really isn't good for learning. So, you know, we're just asking families and parents to work with their pediatricians in their schools to make sure their kids are up to date.
Doc, another text here. Good question. So 96% of the cases were, in fact, vaccinated. Was there anything unique about the other 4%? Were they, like, older, or do we know? Was there anything consistent there?
We don't. 96% were unvaccinated who from the outbreak.
I mean, were unvaccinated, right.
Right.
I'm sorry.
We don't have information on those other cases. Hopefully the CDC will put out some information. But again, you know, why was she the one in 100 that got the mild case of chickenpox, even though she had been vaccinated? Who knows? There's nothing unusual about her. What it is likely is that these folks who were vaccinated, the small number who still got the disease, they were likely in that community where measles is running rampant. So their exposure is very, very, very high. In the outbreak communities, the primary communities in Texas and some of the surrounding states, again, this virus is so transmissible that if there's a lot of people walking around with it and they're at, you know, Walmart, they're at church, they're at a community center, they're at a basketball game, right? Then people living in those communities are going to be repeatedly exposed. And so it's very likely that, you know, your luck sort of runs out for that small number. But again, I want to highlight that the vast majority of people who are vaccinated in those areas are not getting disease. And that's exactly what we want to see.
Yeah. And there's really no other precaution that you can take, right? So if you're going to travel overseas, there's no magic pill or anything else. Either you've been vaccinated or not. And if not,
exactly.
You should probably get vaccinated.
Yep. That's right. Very straightforward. Yep.
So it's kind of an easy proposition on this one, right?
Right. It is.
You either do or you don't, one or the other. And you decide on what risk you're willing to take, I guess.
There's been so much misinformation and disinformation about this vaccine. And I want to just be honest about that. I know it can feel like for families, like, wait, what do I do? I've heard that maybe it's dangerous. I've heard that, I heard there was a link with autism. And, you know, I'm the mother. My oldest child is on the autism spectrum, and he got all of his vaccines. But when he was young, it was right when that study had come out and had not been debunked yet. So I really wrestled with it. But I knew he was different. I knew that he was, you know, had some sort of issue long before he ever got his first MMR on his first birthday. And when it came out that study was completely made up, and it's been proven since there's no link between the MMR and autism, I was really angry as a parent that someone had made me question, you know, a medical intervention that was safe. And I thought, my gosh, I could have not protected my child and he could have gotten sick because of really bad information. So I recognize that parents are juggling just a lot of information sources, but we just want to reassure them that there is zero evidence, and it's been proven over and over again, that there is a significant causation between the MMR and autism or other diseases. It's just really unfortunate that some very bad science kind of took hold in the public consciousness 20 years ago, and that still lingers.
I can't even imagine what that was like for you. I just can't wrap my head around
it. It's scary enough to have a child who is diagnosed with something that you're just not familiar with and trying to navigate. Mm-hmm. How do you do right for that child? And I mean, my kid is, I wouldn't trade him for anything. He's the best. But then to find out that you almost made a dangerous choice because somebody lied, that's really frustrating.
No, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We know you're busy. Dr. Jennifer Evagno, Director of New Orleans Health Department, all about measles, folks. The MMR is available. And a couple of places you can go, LDH, the city that you were born in, the state that you were born in, they maintain these records. So if you're not sure and you want to check, that's the path to checking it out. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, we're joined by Dr. Skip Gallagher from UNO, and he is the gentleman that has been keeping his finger on the pulse of what's going on in disciplinary cases within the New Orleans Police Department, and he joins us about yet two more cases that are problematic. Doc, welcome to the show.
Morning, Noel. How are you doing?
Doing well. Two more cases that come up with DWI, NOPD officers. These are a little bit more, a lot more egregious. They had kids in the car with them, which makes it a felony. Tell us about these cases.
Yes, both of them actually involved accidents as well. So I think a DWI is bad enough. I think under certain conditions, we could even say, look, the officer needs some training and maybe can be returned to the force. And I think you even mentioned that last time we spoke, that there's sort of a diversion program that helps officers that are in trouble. But in these particular cases, the officers actually crashed their vehicle. And in both cases, one officer had one juvenile in the car. In the other case, the officer had three juveniles in the car as well as another occupant. I think both officers were more than, I think they were both about twice the legal limit. One was a little over twice the legal limit, and I think the other one was just under twice the legal limit. The other part that's really weird here, neither case was prosecuted. One was in Orleans Parish, one was in Jefferson Parish, and neither case was prosecuted. I think that if we think of this as the average citizen, we would have a difficult time sort of working our way through this system. And I think it's highly unlikely that we'd see the charges go away, particularly if juveniles were involved and there was an accident involved as well. The Channel 4 and Channel 8 have covered some of these, and some of the video I've got from one of the officers who had one juvenile in his car, I've got the video for it. But they're particularly egregious. And I think as a law enforcement officer yourself, you can understand, this is a problem, and a big problem.
So is there an entry in the court record as to why these cases weren't prosecuted, or they just were screened and they were not accepted? They were placed in diversion? Nothing?
At least one of the officers went through a diversion program. May have been both of the officers went through a diversion program. One, the PIB report actually says no prosecute. So the city of New Orleans just refused the charges. And I believe Jefferson Parish did the same thing. It would be interesting to see the court records to see if anything is there about why the charges were refused. But in both these cases, there wasn't just the officer drinking as well as juveniles in it and auto accidents. But also in one case, the driver had an expired insurance. His plate was expired by a couple of years, and the city still didn't prosecute. Now, the PIB reports, at least in one case, actually points this out, and the officer was punished by the NOPD. They did receive a suspension. In the other case, the PIB report is pretty lacking and doesn't really cover much, and sort of dismissed each of the things that the officers noted on scene. When the officers responded to the scene where the car had rolled multiple times in Jefferson Parish, the children didn't appear to be in seatbelts. And the officer who responded noted that the passenger, driver, and the children weren't in seatbelts. Later on, the PIB report says, well, we couldn't confirm this. The driver didn't have a driver's license on him. And they later on sort of looked over that and said, well, we can't confirm this. But it really is disturbing when you see sort of very haphazard or weak reports on officers when both of these are felonies if they were prosecuted, And yet we didn't have that happen in either Orleans Parish or in Jefferson Parish on either of these officers.
So what was the discipline that was doled out in each of these cases?
I believe both served very brief suspensions, but I would have to go back to their long sheets and I could probably find out what their discipline was. I believe they were both given suspensions, but they weren't particularly aggressive suspensions, considering the severity of what was going on here. I mean, as I pointed out in one, it wasn't just that he was drunk and had his daughter in the car, but also that he had an expired plate by a couple of years. And actually there was it had been revoked in November of 23. And then why would the city just not move forward with that. They clearly got breathalyzers on them, and the officers responded to the scene. I didn't read anything in either of the reports that would have thrown some sort of suspicion into why you wouldn't prosecute these officers. But in both cases, they're not. And in both cases, they are still employed by the NOPD. So one is Jonathan McCarty, McCarvey, and the other one is Gerald Lee. And they're still both employed with the NOPD.
And was there a blood alcohol test given and at the scene? Do you know?
Or did not they at the scene. Both officers refused a blood alcohol at the scene. Now, one of the drivers, Gerald Lee, when he was found, he was unconscious. The wreck was pretty severe. The car rolled several times. So he refused. When he was brought around, he refused. In that particular case, I believe all the occupants were transported for medical treatment, but he was later given a blood alcohol test. I think he initially refused and then finally took one, and that's when he got 0.19. And the legal limit is 0.08. So he was just over twice the legal limit when he was finally tested. Now, the other officer refused one on the scene, but later agreed to a blood alcohol test. And at that time, which was several hours later, I think he scored 0.156%. No.
Just under double. Yep. I know that you try to talk with the leadership at the NOPD. Just no comment?
I have not on these. Yeah, I have. Okay. I would love to speak to folks about why we have these officers on there. And I think if you remember our last conversation, you brought up something that I think was really important, which is if we have these people on the force, they can't testify. They're compromised. And I can't remember what you called that, but there is
your credibility is eroded. I mean, you know,
exactly.
When you lie to officers on a scene and then you have to admit later that you lied as a result of, you know, a probative investigation into this. I mean, you know, you have little or no credibility. I mean, you can be impeached on the stand pretty easy. You're mm-hmm. not of 100% value to the organization any longer.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why I always said that we're not in the policing business. We're in the credibility business, because without credibility, we can't police, plain and simple.
Yep. And you can imagine if either of these officers, who are both street officers, if they have to deal with a DWI, they have their own past, which is very much going to prejudice toward, you know, how they're going to behave on the street, whether we're going to see a prosecution move forward, whether they're going to act appropriately. And to be fair, these aren't the only ones. I found, since 2014, I found 25 instances of DWIs in the NOPD, one officer with two. Now, some of those officers are no longer with the force, but these two that I sent you recently, both of those officers are still with the force. And we have others. There was a piece by Channel 8 covering Cleveland Johnson. He is still with the force. He actually had a 60-minute standoff with half a dozen officers in the French Quarter, refusing to be arrested. And you can actually go to Channel 8 and see that video, if you like, or at least part of that video. Certainly they're not going to play the whole 60 minutes where he's surrounded by half a dozen officers refusing to be arrested. There's some very different things going on. This isn't somebody that got pulled over, DWI, you know, gets arrested.
Is this a recent happenstance?
This one was about 3 years ago.
Oh, really?
It took me.
And he's still on the force.
He is still on the force. It took me 2 years to get the records for that. So I started trying to get those records more than 2 years ago, and it took me that long. And I'm still trying to get some of these records. It's really, really difficult to get these records. I'm in court yet again, and hopefully in June. I was supposed to be in court Thursday, but that was pushed, and now it's June. And even then, I don't have a specific date. We cannot pin the city down, and they're continuing to resist providing records. Now, And I filed this suit in 23. So we're now 1.5 years later, and I'm still trying to get records. And some of those records are now well over 2 years old that I'm trying to obtain. And I just can't get them. So it's very challenging to get some of these.
What is the remedy? Does the court actually provide you with monetary damages for your time that you're having to go through this exercise with this organization?
They can,
records?
They can. Luckily, it's the First Amendment Law Clinic at Tulane who's representing me, thank goodness. And they are some brilliant lawyers who understand the law. And they understand public records law in particular. And it is really challenging for them because what happens is we go to court. And in one case, the city attorney showed up at the very last minute. He was late. We had to delay a little bit. He finally showed up, wasn't prepared. And the judge sort of put it off again. So we keep getting these things where the other side, the lawyers that are representing me are always ready. But either the judge isn't ready or there's something that's pushed in front of us or the city isn't ready for some reason. And it just is, it's going on and on. And these are supposed to be fairly quick. Public records should be, they should be public. And they laws.
I'd love to know what judge is not ready, if you would call me in those cases. If it's on their docket,
yes.
And you're there, and the clinic's mm-hmm. there, and everybody's wasting their time, and the judge walks in and says the judge is not ready, it's mm-hmm. a public record request. This is about as low-hanging fruit as it gets. If they can't point to a specific exception to the Public Records Act, you know, that is pertinent,
yep.
It's over. You get the record.
It should be that way. But there is a real push on the city's end to deny these records. Even recently, I've just had one that they've routinely provided over the last year or two, and I just recently asked for that record for 2024, and they've refused to provide it.
It's like grounds?
I have to fight the fight again. Somehow there is information now in the new one that I shouldn't have access to. Yet I've been provided the records back to 2015.
Then redact it. It's simple.
Yes.
But you don't get to disqualify the entire document because there's one sentence in there. You redact that sentence. That's the remedy.
I need to put you in front of the city.
But these judges know that. I mean, they know that. That's why I want to know who the judge's name is. We have a lot of judges coming up for re-election. This is the kind of silly stuff why people lose confidence in the system, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
This is silly. This is an exercise of silliness.
Well,
because what are you protecting in the end? Really,
what are you protecting? What it is it's legal wrangling by the city, and they forced it in front of another judge who suddenly had to put it on their docket. In that particular case, it's no fault of the judge, and it's the fault of the city saying, no, we need it in front of this judge. And I'm like, why can't, and my lawyers are sitting there, we're ready to argue, we're ready to move forward, and they're presenting some piece that, look, we need to move it to another judge, which it got moved to another judge, but now we need to push it up on his docket. So in that
and now we
case,
know why we find ourselves in the predicament that we find ourselves in.
Yes.
We just can't make this stuff up.
I wish I could. I'm not creative enough.
No. Well, thankfully, someone stays the course, quite frankly.
Yes.
If you don't, none of this sees mm-hmm. the light of day. Ever.
Yes. And most of these records, the two that I provided you, these are so difficult to obtain. Really, you've got to be persistent. And I've been at it for years.
But
sort of
who are you protecting here? You have an innocent third party who's been hit by a vehicle driven by a law enforcement agent who's drunk mm-hmm. and has kids in the car.
Yep.
So
without insurance.
Who?
In
without insurance, a expired plate. Who is NOPD protecting? I mean, I would love to hear someone in leadership articulate a position where this mm-hmm. actually makes any sense at all. Because mm-hmm. if it happened to you, and it happened to me, guess where we're going? We're doing the perp walk, right?
Yep.
We're going
to
jail.
Exactly. And there is even another question, which this one bothers me. How much does this cost the city? How much does it cost
to keep
the officers off the street? How much does it cost when an officer hits someone?
You don't understand. You don't understand. The government's got all the money in the world. I mean, we just go back there to that money tree. We're printing it.
I mean, come on. I want my street repaired.
Don't get us called caught in the weeds here, Doc. Shame on you.
Sorry.
You should know better.
Yeah,
Doc, as always, thank you so much. They're screaming in my ears. We got to get out. Dr. Skip Gallagher, watchdog, reports out some incredible stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be right back. Stay with us. When we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust.